As Liz already explained, this is a meditation hall. This is a day of what we call practice. In other words, we'll be spending much of our time in sitting meditation, in walking meditation, but also even in the periods between the formal practice sessions. I'd encourage you to try to sustain the same quality of attention that you may have cultivated while sitting, say, and bring that to bear on the rest periods as well, when you have your lunch, when you go for a stroll, even when you maybe lie down, have a little rest, just to keep coming back to the fact that you're having this experience at all, allowing yourselves to be gently surprised that this is happening, this thing called being human, being conscious, being present. We take it so much for granted, the fact of our life. And I think at the root of this kind of practice, but also I suspect in most religious and spiritual traditions, we use this space and this time to come back to the questions of what it means to be human, what it means to lead this life on earth for the brief period that we are here together. So to try to use the day to let go of what may be preoccupying you in terms of your work situation, your family situation, or whatever other issues may be current in your daily life. And without dismissing those concerns, because clearly they are important for you, to use this day to open up a space, we might call it, in which we try to just pay attention to the bigger picture, what the Chinese rather beautifully call the great matter of birth and death. And again, we don't want to take this with a kind of gloomy seriousness and morbidity. Paradoxically, when we bring our attention to birth and death, which is of course our birth and death, or my birth and death in this case, that actually can wake us up to the sheer presence of being alive. And so in some ways I feel that these apparently serious and rather existential questions also open up a possibility for celebration, for inspiration, to reconnect with the sources of what inspire us most deeply to do what we do, what we value most closely in our hearts. And all of the exercises that we'll be doing are basically methods whereby to cultivate and open up this non-reactive space of mind from which we can somehow realign ourselves with our existence. We can reflect, we can try to come to terms with our life on earth, but without getting caught up in too much theorizing or speculation or you know, churning over philosophical ideas or whatever, but really just coming to rest in that space. In that space of attention and mindfulness or concentration, vipassana, whatever you call it. And again, each time the mind gets taken off into some train of associative thought, or you find yourself just kind of drifting in a kind of dreamy sort of way, as soon as you notice that, come back. Come back to your breath, come back to your body, come back to the contact you have with the ground, the floor here, come back to the presence of this very short-lived community in this room, which will be here for the next 8 hours or so. And just recollect. The word mindfulness, which has become so ubiquitous today, actually means, more literally, it means to recollect. Sati, or smriti in Sanskrit, is the very general word for memory. So when we practice mindfulness, it's more than just paying attention to what's going on in the present moment, although that is crucial. But it's also framed within a recollection of certain values. And at this level, we can even say that to be mindful is a value. We do it because we think it's somehow worthwhile, or someone has persuaded us that it might be worthwhile. And so when we actually practice paying attention to the breath, for example, part of that process includes recollecting that this is something we aspire to do, something we believe will somehow improve or enhance the quality of our lives. We see it as an element of what we might call the good in life. And it's in this sense, I think, that we touch on the root sense also of ethics. I feel in many ways Buddhist practice is an ethical practice. And I don't mean ethics here as a sort of synonym for morality at all. But ethics really as the way we think about how to realize the good in our lives, whatever that good might be, however we might define that. And so the whole path in terms of our thinking, our speaking, our acting in the world is a conscious attempt to lead a life that accords with what we consider to be the deepest values that we hold. And it's a way of living that has deliberately chosen not to just go along with the habitual inertia of our conditioning, of our habitual behavior, be that just instinctive behavior, or be it what we have been, how we've been acculturated in modern Western consumerist society or whatever it might be. So we're actually using this day as a way to choose or to practice living differently than our habitual inertia of what's familiar would incline us to do. And that, I think, is really, at least, how the Greeks understood the word ethics, which of course includes morality, it includes contemplation, it includes wisdom. It's a wonderfully overarching concept. Now, this ethics that we're going to be practicing will be framed today by what I call the four great tasks, which is the title of our workshop or retreat. And I'll explain this afternoon more exactly what I mean by the four great tasks. I use this expression instead of the four noble truths. And the four noble truths are considered by most Buddhists to be the very bedrock of what a Buddhist life is about. But as we'll see this afternoon, I believe that there are certain difficulties and problems with that form of language, particularly the emphasis on the notion of truth. So what I'm interested in is rethinking the Dharma in such a way that it is entirely a form of pragmatic ethics. Pragmatic in the sense that it's concerned with what I can do, whether in my thoughts or in my speech or in my acts, that enables me to flourish more fully as the human person I am, both in a purely individual, even psychological sense, but also as part of a community, as part of a society. And what I think the Buddha understood was how we are we have evolved certain patterns of reaction, particularly such as attachment, aversion, egoism, pride, all the things that Buddhism is somewhat critical of. And the reason that these mind states or emotional conditions or habits of mind are problematic is not, I think, in the first instance, because they cause suffering, although they lie at the origin of suffering, although obviously in many cases they do. But I think a deeper problem is the fact that if we lead a life that is determined by habitual reactivity of such a nature, this actually inhibits or blocks how we might live a fuller, richer, more imaginative, more empathetic, and more wise and loving existence. So in other words, it's all about how we live from moment to moment with greater awareness, greater consciousness, greater sensitivity, in order that we can realize what is called the flow or the stream of this particular way of life. But I'll say more about that this afternoon. So what I'd suggest during the sitting meditation period is, for those of you who already have an established practice of one kind or another, please just do that. If some of you would prefer me to give you suggestions as to what you might do during this day, I would suggest that we start just becoming aware of our breathing and remembering that our breathing is an integral part of our body and that our breathing is our primary relationship with the world that is not us, in this case the physical environment, the atmosphere, the air, and which also of course implies, you know, the process of photosynthesis by the plants and so on and so forth. So as we breathe, we are basically participating, even collaborating, in the life of the world. That the breath is what connects us. So it's not just a kind of a bellows action, kind of a mechanical movement of certain muscles in the torso, but it is a far more a primary relationship with life itself. So that right at the very beginning, with what appears to be a simple exercise of just paying attention to the breath, if we step back and consider the larger picture, we're actually opening ourselves to become more fully conscious of our participation in the life of the world that exceeds us, that is far more than us, that will be here long after we have gone. So it's important, I think, to always locate the practice of meditation within a framework of our understanding of existence and life as a whole. Now again, we don't want to get, when we're actually sitting, not to get too caught up in reflecting or speculating about these concepts or ideas, but at some level to hold that in the background. And as I said earlier, mindfulness, if we think of it as recollection, it's tacitly recalling such a sense of being a participant in this greater world. It's tacitly recalling our life and death. As in many other cases with the word to be mindful, in English at least, is that once we've internalized a certain understanding, then we become implicitly mindful of what that understanding entails. So let's say, for example, we have chosen to get married, and we've taken the vows of marriage. Once we've undergone the ceremony, once we've got used to the fact of living with this other person, we don't have to every moment remember our marriage vows. But when, for example, we find ourselves in a situation in which we might incline towards an activity that's not in that in a sense conflicts with our marriage vows, at that moment we become mindful that we are in fact married. And I think mindful in that English sense there, in other European languages it doesn't quite work this way, but I think it's a very happy accident that mindful in English refers both to recalling what your commitments and values are, as well as being mindful of what's occurring in the here and now. And that's very close to the term sati or smriti in the Indian languages. In fact, when I was first introduced to mindfulness, and this was now nearly 40 years ago, it was through the writings of a 8th century Mahayana Buddhist monk called Shantideva. Shantideva wrote a book called The Bodhicharya Avatara, which is translated as A Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And in chapter 5 of this work, he talks about mindful awareness. But primarily, he presents mindfulness as a form of an ethical awareness of what it is that we value. That's his primary starting point, to recall your commitments and vows and values. And to do that, to become more attuned to that ethical way of living, then you cultivate the quality of attention and presence of mind from a moment to moment level. And the importance of mindfulness is that we become much more sensitized to the very first uprisings or emergence of, let's say, a thought of anger or a feeling of frustration, or an anxious worry or something. We catch it much more quickly than we may have done before. The problem is that without this training, we're very prone to simply be swept away by an emotion, a feeling, a thought. It's not to condemn such things, that's simply part of life. But they very easily get out of control, and they very easily take us along with them for a long ride. And for those of you who perhaps are beginning a practice of meditation, you might find it a bit surprising how difficult it is to keep what the Buddhists call the elephant of the mind, or strictly speaking, the rutting elephant of the mind, in check. This practice is very simple, but that doesn't mean that it's easy. In fact, it's arguably one of the most difficult things to do. And it comes as a bit of an uncomfortable surprise that simply sitting still and being aware of one's breath can be so demanding. Demanding, not because in itself it's a difficult thing to do, but because it seems almost to provoke a kind of aversive reaction. So 1 minute we're watching the breath, we're nice and still and quiet, or reasonably so. The next thing we know is 10 minutes have elapsed. We don't quite know where we've been. We have a lingering recollection, say, of a daydream. But actually, we've kind of just drifted off. We've actually been only semi or even unconscious during that period. And that can be a little worrying, that we're so... we find it so difficult just to be present. Again, it's important not to demonize reactivity or greed or hatred. These are purely natural products of our own evolution. There's nothing wrong with them in and of themselves. The problem is that they prevent us, as I said before, from somehow taking charge of our own lives and living a life according to what we have consciously chosen to value. In other words, to lead an ethical life. I'm not going to say any more. What I suggest we do now is we stand up for a couple of minutes just to stretch. just to get our legs, our back a little bit more flexed. Take a few deeper breaths so that you, again, bring your attention more into the sensations of the body rather than being preoccupied with ideas or thoughts or memories or plans. Coming back into the body. This is a practice that's very much about embodiment. Becoming more aware that we are flesh.